when I was here at the BSU for 5 years, I saw many people get up here, and there was always kind of this awkward thing where people come up and they put this thing over their head, plug them in, and it always took a few minutes. Well, we've modernized here, and I already have the microphone, and you know, I kind of was envisioning this, getting ready to speak at Vespers and having this thing set over my head. It's kind of like the gold medal, BSU, you know, it kind of came over. And but wow, this is great. I'm just going to use the little overhead, and I'm going to ask the little overhead guy here if, when I point, that he can turn on. There we go. Well, I am delighted to be here. Like Stephanie said, I live in Umalakleet, Alaska. And Umalakleet, they're good, okay, is there at the star here, okay? And that's where I live. Unalakleet is an Eskimo village of about 750 people, and it is right on Norton Sound, and it is a wonderful place. I've just been living there about, 6 or 7 months full-time now, but that's where my husband is from, and Nora, I have an office from, she's my sister-in-law as well. And I want to share with you tonight how faithful the Lord has been to lead me, and how he's taken me from Dallas, Texas, which is where I graduated from high school, to this place. Way north. And I have to tell you, don't feel bad if you do not have a concept of Alaska. On the first date I went on with my now husband, we were driving the car and I was real excited. And of course, we knew each other for a long time but didn't know much about each other. And he was, of course, talking about Alaska. And I have to admit, I'm not the most geographically literate person ever born. And he said, you know, and I was asking questions. He said, you know, it gets kind of old, really, you know, people ask me to live in an igloo and that kind of stuff. But the thing that cracks me up the most is that the people who think Alaska is an island. And I went, it's not an island. I'm thinking in my head, it's not an island. And I was trying to think, where is it? I mean, really, where is it? And so, of course, I went home, I looked at the map. But, you know, it's always just by itself in the bottom, you know. And I thought, well, that's just amazing that it's just so straight on one side. But of course, I realized soon after, I got home, looked at my globe, and found where it was. And of course, I never admitted to him that I thought it was an island until we were engaged. And then I learned, so feel comfortable if you don't exactly know where Alaska is. I want to start off with an illustration. Our musician leader, he quoted a verse from Isaiah. It's kind of funny because I had planned to start this illustration. I live in Norvik. Oh, can you turn on sometime? For 2 years, and Norvik is just inside the Arctic Circle, about here. And it's about 60 miles from the coast, okay? And I had the privilege of, okay, turn off. I had the privilege of living there for 2 years, and I taught for 1 year, taught high school there. With my husband, the second year, I decided not to teach, and we started getting involved with youth ministry. And I had the privilege to share Christ with several high school students, and one girl's name is Raylene, and she was in eighth grade when I was sharing with her. She became a Christian in my home, and then I began discipling her as soon as I can after that, and that was like in March. And the Lord led us to Unalakleet this year, and so I was only able to spend a few months with her, and she wrote me a letter just about a month ago, and it was so exciting because she's still walking with the Lord, and she's reading her Bible. You know, she's just a ninth grader, and you know, everything's so exciting for ninth graders, and you could hear her letter just had hearts and balloons all over it, and it was just really exciting to get. And it was great because I've been getting a lot of letters lately of kids who are really struggling. But hers was, she was just so in love with the Lord, and God was teaching her. And on the back, it just cracked me up. On the back, she had written in big words, "By his wounds, we are healed." Wounds, W-O-M-B-S. "By his wounds, we are healed." And I just started cracking up, and of course I had to show Curtis. It was so cute because she was really trying to show me how spiritual she was, you know, and put this on the back. And she probably doesn't even know it's by his wounds we are healed, and it's in the Bible. Of course, I wrote her back. But you know, a lot of times we hear things that just kind of become cliche-ish to us, or there's a verse that we've heard so many times we kind of just quote it and just kind of passes over, and we've kind of lost the depth. Well, I want to share tonight from a verse that may have become cliche-ish to you, that you may quote, and it just, you know, it means something, but it's just kind of gotten old. Well, the Lord has really renewed this in my heart as I have been thinking about what to share with you all, and that is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And I bet a lot of you can quote it. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make the path straight. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, I just pray that tonight You would speak through me. Lord, I pray that the words I say would honor You, and Lord, that there would be nothing about me to get in the way of what You want to say tonight. Lord, calm my spirit and help me communicate clearly Your word and Your truth. In Jesus' name, amen. What I want to do is I do want to share a little bit at the end about what God is doing in Alaska, but I just, I stand in awe at the Lord and how He took me from here to there. And I want to share with you the truth of that verse, trusting in the Lord, and how He taught me some lessons in three areas, and I hope it will apply to you. And basically, I want to talk about trusting and your path of life. You look at your life as kind of a path, who you're taking with you along the way, what you're doing, and where you go. Because I've had to trust the Lord in some major ways in my life. And I'm going to do that kind of topically, and I'll kind of have to go back in time. But basically, I want to share with you my testimony of how the Lord led me and how He's blessed me. And then at the end, I'll share a little bit about some of the exciting, exciting things happening in Alaska. Just a little background about me. I was born in Norman. Now, it was then Municipal Hospital. When I was 9, I moved to Dallas, to a suburb of Dallas with my family. And while I was here in Norman, my parents had taught me about the Lord, and I had gone to church. And when I was 8 years old at a Bible school, I heard for the first time that it made sense to me that I needed to receive the Lord. I needed to ask for His forgiveness, and that I needed to ask Him to come into my heart if I wanted to spend forever with Him, and I did. So I walked down the aisle and prayed a prayer, and the Lord came into my heart and became a very special thing to me. And I grew up in a normal family, was involved with youth group, and when I was 15, I remember very clearly being on the balcony of a camp, and it was like in my heart, I knew the Lord had been working, and He, in my heart and in my spirit, He asked me, Christy, will you follow me wherever I lead? Will you make a commitment now to go where I lead you? And I just remember it like it was yesterday, and I thought about it, and I said, sure, okay, I'm going to go for it. And I lived a normal life, high school, graduated, and as I was deciding in college, I had planned to go to Baylor, my whole high school. I mean, it was Baylor. Well, the last year, and I'm a very planned person. I mean, I knew when I was in ninth grade I was going to Baylor and how much them cost. Very planned. Well, the last year, my senior year, I'm not going to Baylor. It's not where I'm supposed to go. I have no idea where I'm supposed to go. The Lord led me to OU through a variety of circumstances, and I was driving in my little 81 Mustang to OU. I left to say goodbye to my mom and dad, and I was driving. I was thinking about my life and what was going to happen, and it was like the Lord started knocking on my heart again. He said, you remember that commitment you made to me when you were 15? He said, will you still follow me wherever I lead you? And I thought about it, and I thought, yes, but keep it exciting. Please? Please, that's my only request is I'll go. I like to have fun, and I just keep it fun and exciting, and I'll go. And it has been very exciting. As soon as I came to OU, I got sidetracked. I mean, it was like the minute I hit on campus, here I just said, Lord, yes, I'm going to follow you. I started getting sidetracked. And in this part, I want to talk a little bit about who goes with you and relationship. I had just made this promise, and for me, one of my main goals when I got to college was to find a boyfriend. I mean, that was like top of the list. Get moved in, get a cute, your room set up, and find a boyfriend. That was like, well, that's what you do when you go to college, right? I mean, that's it. It's like this massive, just everything. And so that was my total focus was. And I was able to do that, no problem. And really, for the first 2 years, I was sidetracked. I mean, I was coming to freshman ministry teams. That was freshman encounter back then. And I was going to church, and I was meeting with girls, and I was in my Bible study. But really, my heart, yeah, God, I'll follow you ever, was, this is what I want. And so Satan was able to just kind of sidetrack me, pull me away. And, to me, the ultimate was who you're with. That's where everything, if you're happy, it's who's with you in a relationship like that. And really, for 2 years, I went through following the Lord on my own. And every time, it just got a little further off the path, a little further. And finally, by my sophomore year, I was in a relationship that was not healthy and bad news. And I had a friend named Cynthia, and she's sitting right over here. And she continually informed me of this every day. this was not from the Lord. And, you know, I was somehow able to rationalize it away. Oh, God, you know, I mean, I'm going to go where you want me to go, but right now, this is more fun. And so I was sidetracked. And, you know, it got to where God would tell me, you know, this is not my venue. I mean, Cynthia reminded me of it a lot, and God reminded me of a lot, but I was able to rationalize away. And so finally, it came to a point where I knew it was my last out. God had told me for so long, I knew that it was now, or he was going to just kind of leave me alone until I was ready to come back on my own. And I'm thankful for friends like Cynthia, for the BSU, for leaders who helped me, and I was able to turn to him. And after that time, God started teaching me some things about him. There are a couple verses. One was Proverbs 23:26. Give me your heart and let your eyes see my way. Revelations 2:3. You have suffered and endured hardship for my name, but this one thing I hold against you, forsaking your first love. Psalms 37:4. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he'll give you the desires of your heart. And I finally said, God, I'm giving it to you. I can't do this anymore. You want to meet my needs. And so I trusted him in a relationship. You know, I think why I got sidetracked was I didn't think I was going to get sidetracked. You know, pride is one of those areas when there's a verse in 1 Corinthians that says, be careful if you think you're standing firm, if you don't fall. And, you know, I was known to youth group, everything in high school. And, I mean, I knew God for the Bible. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to do it. But, you know, I got my eyes off the way. And some of you may be sidetracked in this area right now. And, you know, as I share a little bit about how God eventually led me to my husband, I realized why was my enemy trying to sidetrack me in that one area over and over and over again. Because he knew that when God led me to the right person, it was going to open up a whole world different to me. And that was his plan for me. And, you know, I think a lot of times Satan will try to sidetrack us in the one area. If he can get that, everything else is going to kind of come off of that. So I challenge you that if you are sidetracked in your relationship, trust the Lord. Give it to him. I've been down both roads, and his road is definitely, definitely better. After several months of just giving the Lord my heart, I knew him when he was a freshman. I was a year older. But I met my husband, Curtis, and it's kind of interesting how we met. I was out of high school, and I was leading a DT team, even though out of high school. I was out of college, even though I was leading a DT team. And we went to, do you guys still have the Wild Goose Chase at Halloween time? Adam's Wild Goose Chase. Okay, I'm dating myself. Okay, well, he did this Wild Goose Chase thing, and I was out of college, and most of my friends were married or dating very seriously, and I was not. And so I was kind of the only one thinking about going to this thing, and I thought, well, you know, I have my DT girls. I really should be there with them. So I'll go to the bonfire part at the retreat center. So I did, and wouldn't you know it, I just happened to sit by Mecca. See, I remember Mecca was sitting right next to me. And Curtis, my husband, came and sat down by me. And I knew who he was. But to me, he was just the guy from Alaska. It's an island. And and he said, I have never lit things. I mean, I never helped, and he had never let himself, and he was playing the guitar, and he was nervous, and I said, sure, no problem. So we started singing, and actually, just a few months before that, he'd given his testimony. I was like, wow. I mean, this guy's been to BSU for 4 years? Wow. And I lead over to Tammy Piggott. Now, some of you may know Tammy. Tammy, I should set you up with him. She was one of my DT girls, and I thought, man, now that is a quality guy. I should set you up with him. She's like, no. Okay, so then I get this chance to sit by him, and we sang, and we start talking afterwards, and I was like, wow. And just that morning, I had prayed, God, where are all the guys? I mean, all my friends are paired up. Just show me there are still cool guys out there. I mean, just show me there's still some out there. And then that night, we had this bonfire, and I went home and said, thank you, Lord. And I wasn't thinking that way about him. Just thank you, God, that there are still new guys out there. Well, things happened, and we got married about 18 months later. And it was great. But you know, the Lord is so faithful. I mean, he leads us. He knew. And one verse, I want to share, then I'm going to go on to something else. One verse, there was a point where Cynthia and I were at a retreat. And I was it had become very apparent to me that the person I had thought, I mean, I just knew this is who God was going to leave me with. We've been friends for years in the BSC together, and it just made sense. And this is going to be the guy. Well, it came very clear that he was being engaged very soon, that it was not going to be him, you know? I mean, it wasn't. And it's funny now, but it was very, very confusing at the time for me, and Cynthia gave me the verse. Psalms 37:4, so Christy, delight yourself in the Lord, and he'll give you the desires of your heart. Either he'll change your heart, or he'll leave this. This will happen. That same day, I went to my grandma's because she had bought me a Bible for my birthday and was going to write a verse in the front of it. I got there, and I opened the Bible, and in the front it said, Psalms 37:4, delight yourself in the Lord, and he'll give you the desires of your heart. And I thought, wow. Well, a couple years later, on March 7th, I was having my quiet time in the morning, and I was reading the Psalm, Psalms 37:4, delight yourself in the Lord, and he'll give the desire of your heart. And that was the day Chris proposed to me. And it was just a full circle that the Lord does. And when we delight in him, he does give us the desires of our heart. So in your path, whether it be married or single, trust him. Trust him with it, because he will honor your commitment to him. Okay, the next thing I'm talking about is your path and what you do. Now, a lot of you may, how many of you still have not declared a major? Okay, just up front, not declared, okay, a couple of you. How many of you have changed at least once? Okay, how many of you changed at least twice? Okay, how many of you changed three or more times? Okay, well, see, okay. You know, I know this is an issue. What are you going to do? You know, God, what do you want me to do? Just tell me, I'll do it. Well, when I went to OU, I have to be honest, my goal, and those of you who know me are going to crack up this, what I wanted to be was I wanted to be the Oprah Winfrey of the 1990s. I mean, Oprah Winfrey, I was going to be the next one, she's going to hand me her show, and it was going to be me. I'm serious. And I came to OU with that goal. I came to the Pizza Bash, and Billy Crockett was our musician, the Pizza Bash. And he started singing this song. At the front of it had these newscasters and all the bad news. And it was like God said, nope, no, you are to tell the good news, not the bad news. And I knew, well, I guess broadcasting's out of the picture. And so I was in journalism as a high school student. I was on a journalism scholarship. I've got a major in journalism, you know, so I'm going to keep my spending. And so public relations was what just came naturally, came next. And I felt like that makes sense, and I didn't hear anybody saying, mm-mm. So changed my major, went through public relations, no problem. That was going to be it. I was going to do public relations. And about my junior year, I started getting this tug in my heart about missions. Oh, no. I mean, I remember being a little kid hearing about the medical missionaries and thinking that was really neat. But missions, wow. You know, I don't know how I can do public relations in Africa. I just can't see it going together. But the Lord didn't have me change my major. And I just kept in public relations, and I prayed God, so I changed my missions. But I really was waiting. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't submitting to that. And so I struggled with that for a couple of years. Finally, I gave in. Okay, I couldn't fight anymore. Okay, Lord, okay, yes. I told you back when I was 15 that I would go where you want me to go. And now you're saying mission, so okay. Took a big sigh of relief, and nothing happened. You know, I thought a map was going to just pop up and there. But really, nothing happened, and it didn't. But I knew that God was going to lead me. As Curtis and I started dating, he made it very clear to me that he was a package deal. Curtis, Alaska, together. You couldn't have Curtis unless you're going to Alaska. It was very clear, and I'm very thankful that he made it very clear, like on our first date, you know, Curtis, Alaska, they're one. And so from then, like, oh my goodness, you know, this is even weirder, you know, than mission. And but God started. In fact, Nancy was my ministry team leader, and I remember her very clearly saying, "Christy, you know, if you feel like you're called to mission, and you don't think Alaska is." You can do Alaska, then you shouldn't be saying him. And so I started praying. I felt like the Lord was saying, hang in there, just trust me. Okay. Well, we got married, moved to Alaska, just like we planned. And I asked him, you know, Curtis, I feel like I'm called to mission. God is going to just call me and then not call you. And that's, you know, it's either one or both or none. And Curtis said, yes. You know, he'd been to Russia. He came back speaking Russian fluently after being there for 7 weeks. You know, it was obvious that God, I thought, oh, well, it's in Russia, that makes sense, fine, you know. And, but, you know, it was really neat. I remember before I left, Nancy said, well, this is a great preparation for you for overseas in Alaska. That's definitely different. And I thought, yeah, you're right, it is. And so, but, you know, last November, I had was on a trip, a conference trip to Colorado, and I had left Alaska for quite a while, and I was on a bus in Fork in Denver, and here I thought, you know, Colorado is the most incredible state. Well, then if you go to Alaska, you're like, it's like cheeseburger compared to Big Mac, you know, as far as the beauty. And I was missing Alaska, and I was like, God, I don't want to leave Alaska. I mean, I know missions, but I don't want to leave. This is where my heart is. And it's like you said, hello, this is what I planned for you all along. Alaska is it. That's where you're going. Okay, it's not a foreign country, but everything is foreign except for the language. They speak English, but everything else is totally different. That's what I called you to. And I was like, whoa. You know, and I thought, well, that's home. I mean, that's not foreign. And he said, no, that's... And, you know, I never knew I had a desire. I never dreamed that the desire of my heart was to stay in Alaskan village of less than 750 people and disciple and raise up leaders. But God knew, and I wouldn't want to do anything else at this point. So trust him. You know, you just never know what he's preparing you for. The last thing is where you go. Oh, let me just sit back a little bit. As far as the public relations thing, when Curtis and I got married, I thought, you know, probably in an Eskimo village of 700 people, there's not going to be a lot of public relations jobs just waiting for me. So what am I going to do? Well, we decided that I would get certified to teach. And I remember thinking, why did I waste 4 years getting a public relations degree if I was going to teach? Why didn't I just get education degree? You know, in the ministry that I am in, I probably produce 10 to 12 newsletters every year. There aren't a lot of communications people, and so everything I learned as a public relations, I have applied over and over again in the ministry that I'm working in. And see, God knew. You know, it made sense. I mean, he just had a better idea of how much sense it made than I did. Where you go? You know, I was to Glen 1 year, and they have this little I don't know what they're called, the little devotionals within the room, the Glen, if you guys have been there. And I had just read in my quiet time in Genesis where God was telling Abraham to go to a place he would show him. He wanted to go now, he'd show him later. And that's when I was kind of dealing with the missions thing, and I thought, oh, he's not talking to me. So then I opened up for the day in the Glen thing, and it was the exact same verse. Go to a place I will show you. And I started having a trust in where I would go. Once we got to Alaska, can I have a napkin? When we got to Alaska, we spent our first year in Fairbanks, like right not here. We got certified to teach, and we had to go through this horrible job interview process where there's like 1,000 people at a hotel looking for about 250 jobs. And we were looking for teaching jobs. The one thing we prayed was, God, we want to go to a place, it had to be a village, we want to go, but we want to go to a place where there is a live Christian body growing. You know, that is a big request in Alaska, especially in the villages, because there's not a lot of happening stuff happening at the time in the villages for fellowship for us. We got 3 job offers. Okay, one, okay, Nora didn't put, is this St. Lawrence Island, Nora, right here, or Russia? Okay, St. Lawrence Island is like right here. It is an island, okay, it is an island. And it's right here. It's about 40 miles from Russia. And that was one of our job offers. I said, no. Okay, then the second job offer was around here somewhere, Manitoba. Now, Curtis is from up here, and this is a big distance. It wasn't that big, but it was down here. And it looked pretty good until we got this offer up here, okay, north of the Arctic Circle. Now, remember, I'm from Texas, you know, hot, sunny, north, no sun part of the time, and cold. And, but you know, we just felt that was it. And we didn't feel like God said, go to Norvik, that's where you're supposed to be. It just seemed like, okay, we'll go there. It's closest to home. Okay, well, we went there, and we were flying this little tiny plane, okay? Seats 6 people, 5 in the pilot. And, we left Kotzebue, which is right here, and we had to fly about a 15-minute flight in. And, I'm thinking, what am I doing? You know, what am I doing? And we're flying to this little place. There's nothing but tundra and animals underneath me. And, you know, the Lord just gave peace. Yes, this is where you're supposed to be. We get to Norvik, and we find out that there is this incredible body of growing believers there. I mean, not just a couple. We're talking like 25 people who meet every other week to praise the Lord and to fellowship and to share. Now, that's not necessarily in the church building, but it was just amazing. We were overwhelmed. And we went to church like 3 weeks after we'd been there, and there's this little lady named Mildred. Well, she was probably, she's probably close to 80, if not 80 already. And she, we hadn't met her, and we'd share with her. And, you know, when you go to a, and Norvik has about 600 people. You know, when you go to a small town, they notice when you're new, you know? I mean, it's not like you can kind of mix in, especially when there's probably no more than 25 white people in town. Okay, I mean, it's very obvious when I was there. Now, Curtis, he was a little, he's a native, so he doesn't look fair, light hair, but they knew. You know, the kids would stare at us and whisper, and I was thinking, man, you know, God, what are you going to do? We were nervous. It's our first year to be teaching. We're in a totally new place. Our house was totally interesting. I mean, and Mildred got up in church and said, I just want to share that in 1969, I was on a plane from Fairbanks to Cotton, and I prayed, Lord, send us Christian teachers. Send us Christian teachers. And you know, 1969 was the year I was born. And I just about fell over. I was so amazed. You know, she prayed the year I was born that he would send us. And God knew. Boom. That's who I'm going to send. He knew 23 years before I ever got there, 24. And I was just so overwhelmed with how the Lord had led. And that was where I was supposed to be. That was it. And about in November of that year, now you have to remember, okay, this is, it's not like Northern Exposure, but it is like Northern Exposure. I mean, there's no roads where we live. We have to fly there. And we do see moose. They don't usually walk through the middle of town, but we do see them. And Curtis was in Cotsview for a teacher in service or coaching or something. And there were basketball games that weekend, and I wanted to go. Well, either fly or you go by snow machine, which is a snowmobile. Okay? And Curtis said, let's take a trip on our snowmobile. I was like, okay. What are we talking here? He said, oh, about an hour and a half. Okay, how cold is it? It's about 25 below zero. Okay, so let's do it. It sounds fun. So I got dressed up. I mean, I'm, you know, you walk like this, and you're on the snow machine, and he takes off. You're over frozen ice almost the whole time. And I thought back to that little drive, my 81 Mustang to OU, when God said, will you go where I send you? And I said, I was like, okay, God, you have kept it exciting. Yes, you have kept up your part of the deal. And, you know, it has been exciting. You know, it hasn't been easy. But, you know, when we trust the Lord, when we trust him, and we don't lean on our own understanding, whether it's when we expect it to happen, or if it's what we expect, or who it's what we expect, when we trust in him, he will make our path straight. You know, just recently we had to trust him with the decision to move. In Norvik, we led a youth group. We had junior high kids from 7 to 8 o'clock in our little home, a little living room, probably about the size of this thing here. Okay, you're looking at about 18 to 19 junior high kids in there. And then they would leave. We'd kind of push them out at 8, and here come the high school kids at 8 o'clock, and they would stay till 10, basically, so we kicked them out, you know, go home, time to go. And I had the privilege of seeing about 8 or 9 girls come to the Lord in one day. And it was the most incredible thing that had really ever happened to me in ministry. So I was just telling them about Jesus. And I said, well, if you want to know more, come over tomorrow, some girls. Well, Raylene, the girl came up and said, no, not tomorrow, today. I want to know now. I said, well, the high school kids are coming in. We've got to get to now. I said, okay. So we went back. She prayed to receive the Lord. And I said, why don't you come with 2 girls who are coming tomorrow? And she said, okay. So the next day I was substitute teaching in the school, and I had a girl, I hear you're going to talk about being a Christian. Can I come? And I said, sure. Well, I had another girl, can I come to your house? And I hear you're going to talk about how to become a Christian. Well, at 7 o'clock, about 12 girls came into my living room. 4 of them were girls that were in an older discipleship group, and they were going to share how they came to the Lord. Eight of them, though, just came. For an hour, I sat there and explained to them that Jesus loved them and he wanted to have a relationship with them and they could be forgiven and they could have an abundant life here. So I said, we talked it out, answered questions, and we prayed. I said, if you prayed, could you just let me know that? Every single one of them. I about fell over. And, you know, it's amazing what God wants to do. And I thought, well, we're going to be here a while, and then I've got to disciple these girls. There's nobody else here to do it. Well, about the same time, Curtis the call and says, we want you to consider teaching in middle school next year. Well, are you kidding? There's no way. This cannot be God's will. No way. I mean, there's all these kids who need someone. This isn't God's will. I just know it. Well, I realized I hadn't prayed about it. You know, I'm just deciding. And the more I prayed, the more I realized the Lord is leading. But you know, it was not my desire. It wasn't something I wanted to do, but I just had a peace to serve the Lord is leading. But God, what about these girls? I mean, I think you made a mistake here, you know? I mean, I'm just going to leave them, and they're just going to be little orphans here, and there's nobody. And it was like he said, Christy, don't you think I love them more than you? And so I had to trust the Lord to go. The exciting thing was that God provided another woman who moved in that year that I was able to train, and now she works with those girls. But you know, God, he does know. Sometimes it doesn't make sense. He knows what he's doing. And I hope that you'll trust him. I want to share two illustrations with you. When we go out in the country, I mean, when I was a freshman, I was like the ultimate city girl. Cynthia and I were laughing about this today. We went on a retreat when I was a freshman to Atoka. Is anyone here from Atoka? Or any other? Okay, well, my FMC group decided to have a reunion in Atoka. And a farm, I'd never done a farm. No, I'm not lying to you. I wore, okay, gray dress slacks, a pink sweater, and pink pumps to the farm. And I have a picture of me riding a four-wheeler wearing this. I'm not kidding. And Cynthia says that her husband tells the story all the time. You know, for God to take me from that to living in Eskimo Village, we ride snow machines everywhere, was a stretch, you know. But he did. He knew, and I couldn't be happier. But we go outside all the time. I just love to go on the snow machine. It's so fun, and the four-wheeler, and catching fish. It's just so exciting. And God has taught me so much just through his creation. One experience I want to share with you. Curtis and I, okay, like I said, we were in Norvik here, and we were going to go to Kotsu here. Curtis was already in Kotsu, and he wanted me to come. And I said, well, do you want me to fly? He said, no, we need a snow machine. I can't remember why, but I said, so what do you want me to do? I want you to drive it yourself. Myself? Yeah, drive it yourself. And I said, well, how am I? I mean, I kind of remember how to get there. It's not like there's road signs, you know? I mean, it's like the river, then there's a trail, then there's a trail, and then there's a river, and I had done it, but, you know, I was just behind him, holding on, trying to say, well, I never really watched. And I said, well, I can't. He said, well, why don't you follow Jim Barefoot? Now, Jim Barefoot is a guy who's been a youth minister there for about 18 years. He knew the land. He said, you just follow him. He will take you there. He said, you can do it. You know, I had never driven more than probably 20 minutes by myself. And it's not you know, two-lane highway. I mean, it's rugged. And so I said, okay, if you think I can do it, I'll do it. It was kind of exciting. So we hop on the snow machine, and he goes off. Now, mind you, I also have this little sixth grader riding behind me who needed a ride. And he heard I was going, and so he said, can I ride with you? And I said, okay. So his name is Gilbert, okay? Now, Gilbert is, and I didn't dare tell him I had never driven by myself before. And so he's on behind me, and I'm going, okay, here we go. And it wasn't bad, and I was taking the hang of it. I didn't like to go very fast, but I was going probably about 30 miles an hour on the snow machine, and we're going. Well, I knew enough to know when Jim in front of me turned this way, we were not supposed to go that way. Now, I knew enough. I knew it because there was no trail. I mean, it was just tundra. There was nothing that showed that anybody had ever been that way before. And I'm thinking, what is he doing? This is not the way. Okay, I know him. I mean, he's been there 18 years. He's like the wilderness man, and I can trust him. So I'm going behind him. And it's, okay, well, then it starts getting really bumpy because the wind blows drifts over, and it was just boom, boom, boom. And it was starting to get kind of painful. You know, here Gilbert's on the back just kind of flopping around. And I was so afraid I was going to fly him off the thing, you know, and Okay, so we're going, and it is getting worse and worse. It's so hard. I mean, it was painful to drive. And I'm thinking, what have I done? Is he lost? I mean, where is he going? I know this is not the way. And it was freezing cold. It was probably 20 below. And we usually don't travel when it's that cold, but it was, and we were going. And I'm about to start crying, but I've got Gilbert on the back. You know, I can't lose him. And Jim's going on in front of me. And we came over this one. It was kind of gray out. When it's gray, everything is gray. You can't tell where there's a bump or where there's a little hill. It's kind of hard to see. So we're going, and I come up, then I hit air. And I came down. I didn't see it, and I went, ka-dum! And I hit the front of my face on the windshield. Okay, ka-dum! Thank goodness I had my goggles on. So it just kind of scared me. I was just ready to stop, and I kept going because I knew, okay, this doesn't make any sense, but I know he knows something. So finally, after probably 25 minutes, we end up on the river. And I pull up to him, and he's pulled up, and he's just talking away, you know. And I said, is that the way we normally go? He said, oh, no. I said, I don't think I've ever been that way before. It's kind of bumpy, huh? And I said, yeah. I said, are we going to stay on the river from now on? And he said, yeah, there's this one path we might try. We'll see how it is, you know. And I was, but, you know, the whole time I'm thinking, isn't this kind of like God? You know, sometimes he takes us on a path that doesn't make sense. You think, I know this is not the right way. But the only reason why I didn't give up and turn around is because I knew Jim. I knew he knew the land. Now, it didn't make any sense to me. It still doesn't make any sense to me why we went that way. But we got there. And I was in tears. We got there. But we got there. And, you know, that's how you live in our lives. He is going to lead us. It doesn't make sense sometimes. And sometimes it is painful, you know. And sometimes it is fun and exciting, and the mountains are beautiful, and the moose walk by, and you just stop. It's like you're living the Discovery Channel. You know, sometimes it is that way. But the thing is, we have to trust who's leading us, and we are going to follow. The last illustration I want to share is that we go berry picking every fall. And if you've never, I didn't realize that God has just planted berries everywhere. Blueberries, these orange berries called salmon berries, cranberries, wild raspberries, just areas covered with tundra. Every fall, we go berry picking. Well, our first time in Norvik, it was cranberries are my favorite to pick. They grow in big clumps. Just grab them by the handful, and they're easy to pick. And I had asked a lady, where do you pick cranberries? Well, I learned very quickly that you did not ask that question. Kind of like asking someone how much they weigh. I mean, in a way, or how old they are. You know, because they don't want to give their secret spot away, you know. And I learned very quickly that was a taboo question to ask. And she said, on the bluff. That's all she said. Well, there's bluffs all along this river, you know, for miles on the bluff. And so, okay. Well, my friend was coming back with gallons of cranberries. Gallons of them, after only being a couple hours. I thought, okay, we're going to the bluffs. So Curtis and I get in the boat. We, our friend and his brother, some kind of wooden boat. We go in the boat, and we go to the bluffs, and we stop, and we pick. And I wanted the berries to be right there. We stop, we look, and if there were no berries, I'd say, nope, this isn't the one, this is the one. So we get in the boat, and we go. We'd stop, I'd look, nope, no berries, let's go. Okay, well, we'd find a few here and there. And I went back, and I said, Heidi, are you sure they're on the bluffs? Yep, they're on the bluffs. She wouldn't tell me, and she was just gallons, not me. So Curtis said, why don't we climb the bluff? And I said, climb them? Maybe they're up there. But surely not. You know, why would there be berries way up there? And he said, let's try it. So we started, and in the first couple times, we just picked there on the edge, and you get maybe like a little butter bowl full, you know, not down. So we started climbing, and it was tough climbing. It wasn't like a sheer rock, but it was, I mean, there's brush, there's no little path, you know, we're climbing over rocks and trees, and I'm getting tired, and it's kind of cold, it was fall time, it was kind of chilly, and we just kept climbing. He said, I think they're just maybe a little over here. We got to this one spot, and I started seeing kind of a larger amount. I said, hey, Curtis, here they are, they're on the bluff, they're right here. He said, no, I think they're up here. And I said, no, Curtis, look at these cranberries. This is all we've seen. I think they're over here. So we went up a little further, and I'll tell you, it was like carpet of cranberries. I mean, it was just everywhere, cranberries. And I was like, after we got up there, and we picked for an hour and had gallons. And the whole time I'm thinking, isn't this like life? You know, we're looking for something, whether it's a berry or a mate or a career. We're looking. And see, God, we know that He says He has the best. But we want it to be easy, or we want it to be simple, and we want it to be right there. We don't want to wait, or we don't want to have to work for it. And so we want to settle for the little berries on the fringe. You know, there are berries there, but it's not what's up there. And so we may go a little farther, and we find this patch. Okay, now this looks good. But really, we know that this is just good. This isn't the best. And so we decide either, well, I'm not gonna go up there. This looks fine. I'll settle for this. And we could have had cranberries. But when we got to the top, after all that, and it was just incredible. Plus we had this beautiful view of the mountains and the river, and then a caribou came darting by me. And I was like, wow, now this is cranberry picking. And I went home with gallons, and I thought, I do not want to settle for good, and the Lord wants for that. And you know, something may look good to you right now in your life, but you know that you're not settling. You're not going with God on you because He wants to do the desires of your heart. And the berries are up there, and we have to keep our eyes on Him. That is the Lord has done. I just want to tell you that God is doing incredible things in Alaska. Curtis, my husband, is the co-director for youth. Work with the Covenant Church in Alaska, and I am a regional coach, which means that I help coordinate youth ministry in villages from here to here. There's no youth pastors, there's not a pastor, but there are people who want to help their youth know the Lord. Alaska has, the suicide rate is 18 times higher than national average among teenagers. One village has already had two suicides in the last 2 months. The teenagers are hurting. You know, I never thought when I was sitting where you are that I'd be working with you. I mean, they're nice, but you know, the Lord's given me a heart for that. Curtis and I have been put in a position because of the training we got here in discipleship that we're basically training leaders. The goal of what we're doing is to train leaders in the villages so that my position at some time will be an Alaska Native doing it instead of somebody coming outside. We have about 25 high school students in our home every week who are wanting to know more about the Lord. There are only about 40 kids in high school. You know, so looking at two-thirds of the high school in our living room. And it's not because of what we're doing. It's because God is raising up laborers. My husband has been praying since he was very young that God would raise up laborers for Alaska, and He is. For He brought me there. He's brought a team of us there. It is very exciting. We're involved with Bible camp ministries. I was in Chicago for a connection, a youth pastor's connection. And it's really exciting. I would have never dreamed that exciting ministry stuff was happening up there, where it's frozen all the time. But it is. God is thawing the heart. And just because of time, I'm not going to share much about what exactly is happening. But if you have questions, I'd be glad to answer them for you, even if you just have questions about igloos and stuff like that. I'd love to talk to you afterwards. But I just challenge you, examine your heart. You know, are you trusting the Lord? Are you sidetracked? Are you settling for the berries on the bank instead of going for the berries to the top because it's a rich, rich blessing? Because the Lord wants to use you, and you never know when you surrender now what His plan is, but I guarantee it's the best. And I don't know that I'll ever leave Alaska unless the Lord just says go. But I'll be kind of wondering. But yeah, you know, if God is going to do something in your life, and He wants you to trust Him. And I'm just grateful that you're here and that you're learning, and God does want to use you. Lord, thank You for this time, and Lord, I just stand in awe of what You've done in just a few years. And Lord, it was nothing of my plan. It was not mine.